You are listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. Like for this one, Pixar's latest, Coco, we should just make Michael say everything because he is like this close to falling apart right now.
I fall apart so hard.
This movie without cracking?
I don't know. I couldn't speak about this movie in the car without cracking. Oh my god, this movie, oh sweet Jesus.
Well, how it affected Michael is a testament to that this is a Pixar movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is non-Cars Pixar.
Yeah. Which is real Pixar. Good Pixar.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like the beginning of Up, but they managed to make you cry
the entire
for 20
movie.
Minutes. So we don't want to just do it at 5. We're going to make you cry for at least 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was like, this is their first Mexican Pixar film, and I thought it was kind of funny the comment forms actually ask you what your race was.
Yeah.
And I was like, gee, I wonder what's going on there.
Data mining.
Yeah. Should we make more Mexican films? I guess we'll have to ask that specific question.
I don't know about Trump in Trump's America.
We're going to build a wall around this movie theater.
It's like a little mini partition around the theaters that shows
that'll
this.
That'll be Coco 2. It's the dead rise up. Yeah. To keep them from, like, building a wall. Because it's building a reflective ghost wall on the other side.
What if Disney and Pixar, as a result of this movie, take all the proceeds and buy as much land on the border as they can, like Cards Against Humanity.
Cards Against Humanity. I've already done that, yeah.
And what's even better, they hired a bunch of lawyers really up-to-date in eminent domain.
Right.
So, yeah. They're like, we're just going to make this as expensive as possible.
Well, it's like when we watch this movie, which a lot of it takes place in the Land of the Dead, like the Land of the Dead that we see is exclusively for Mexicans, although it looks like somebody took a lot of favelas and stacked them on top of each other as kids of skyscrapers.
Well, it helps that only Mexicans actually like celebrate the thing that keeps them alive, apparently.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Is it just because has everyone else got it wrong? Do we just, all the other races, we just disappear?
I'm going to survive forever. Fuck all of you
guys. But that's what I'm saying. If they make a sequel where there's a ghost wall, it could be a whole thing that's the subtopics about, like,
that would be really
good
cool.
Integration.
That would be amazing,
be like,
actually.
The one Mexican ghost character is like, but I like mayonnaise. I don't want there to be a wall.
Like, my family lives in Eagle Pass. How am I supposed to get there?
It's like, I'm second. I'm third generation.
Yeah.
I just like watching Buffy. I don't know.
This one is directed by Lee Unkrich, who, of course, has been working for Pixar for a very long time, who was co-director of Toy Story 2, co-directed Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo. Then Toy Story 3 was his debut, which he won the Oscar for Best Animated Film.
This motherfucker made me cry way too many times.
You beat me to it. You beat me to
really
the exact comment.
He squeezed tears out of me.
The worst thing he's done is Good Dinosaur, which was not bad.
Well, he just
I didn't even see that one.
Okay.
Yeah. I still like it. It's still better than Cars.
But it's not to this quality.
But everything's
it's not
better
bad.
Than Cars.
Yeah. You know,
at least in Pixar world, yeah.
The story here follows 12-year-old Miguel, who lives in a small Mexican village, and he has secret dreams of being a musician, like his idol Ernesto de la Cruz, who was like a very famous flamenco movie star, and like just kind
he's
of
a mariachi. He's very much in that and matinee idol. He's very much in the mold of guys like Javier Solis and Pedro Infante.
No idea who that.
Guys who are worshipped in Mexican cinema and Mexican music.
I'm always afraid when certain musicians like show up on my Facebook feed from my Mexican friends because I think they're dead.
So there's a problem with his dreams, though, is that his whole family, the only family anywhere in their town that hates music, and it all goes back to his, what is it, great-great-grandfather, who walked out on his family to become a musician, literally on their, like, little Day of the Dead display of, like, Dia de los Muertos with pictures of all of them. They've ripped his head out of the picture.
Which is really vindictive. It's like, we hate you so much.
Yeah.
We don't even want you to have an afterlife.
And the family, which the multiple generations have ended up making a living for themselves being shoemakers very successfully, are still like, no music, absolutely music is the worst thing in the world. But he's not having it, and he kind of talks himself into wanting a tryout for this local music contest going on in his town, regardless of his family's wishes. And he decides the only way to do it after discovering that his idol looks like he's his great-great-grandfather, his missing great-great-grandfather, that he's going to break into his tomb and steal his famous guitar.
And
like
his defense was not grave robbery.
In his defense, the grandmother gets really metal and breaks the damn guitar.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that he had.
That's why he has to go to the tomb.
That's why he has to grave rob, yes.
Oh, no, I don't.
Well, anyway, so yeah. he the moment he grabs the guitar, because apparently grave robbing is a very specifically weirdly punished sin, where as a living person you get shuffled off to the land of the dead.
It's in the undead MacGuffin code.
Yeah, it is. It's in the bylaws.
Does that ever really get explained? Actually, I just realized.
Shut up. Have fun. Yeah. Have fun.
And so he's there, and it's established very quickly. If he wants to get back, which he has to do with before sunrise the next day for the end of Dia de los Muertos, that he has to receive the blessing from his ancestors.
Well, he's cursed, right? That's the main thing.
Well, he's cursed, and that's the deal. It's like, that's why he's there, so to go back. But if he doesn't do it by sunrise, he'll have to stay there as one of the dead.
And the condition is he has to go back and never play music again.
Yeah, that's
the immediate
thing.
Because
he only can find his great-great-grandmother, who's still very, very angry.
Who started the rule for hating music
exactly.
to begin with.
So she's like, I'm not giving you a blessing unless you agree to never play music
again. If you've ever met a Mexican woman with a grudge, gentlemen, let me tell you. They hold them grudges long.
I just say, as after a lawyer, long. I was watching that, and I was like, yeah, take that provision because you're a minor. Every provision is voidable at your discretion.
There you go.
Well, it turns out it wasn't voidable because you tried.
Well, no, wait until after the day of the dead is over and they can't enforce the contract.
And maybe even worse double bylaws in that case. You might get a horrible rash or something.
Those laws may work in this world, Elliot, but not in the afterlife.
They need an abogado.
That's right. They really do. Well,
Elliot told him not. Abogado.
So he decides he has to seek out his great-great-grandfather, Ernesto de Cruz, voiced by Benjamin Bratt, who is very hard to get to because even in the afterlife he's like the most famous person there,
and he went to Camartage.
Apparently there's some weird meritocracy capitalism in the afterlife.
Yeah,
because he lives in a goddamn mansion tower and everyone else is living in the
but they also
the
do
huts.
Kind of point that because the ofrendas are the people give offerings, and of course everybody, even famous people, people will make shrines to famous people. There's also great jokes with Frida Kahlo. Same thing. Just every ofrenda somehow ends up with a Frida Kahlo. So these people get more offerings than everybody. So this guy's definitely swimming in goods.
How great is Frida Kahlo in this fucking movie?
Not the real Frida Kahlo, but yes. Playing that joke of the Frida Kahlo character is a lot of fun.
But he ends up teaming up with a guy named Hector, who is like a poverty-stricken dude who's like, okay, I'll agree to help you get to this guy who he swears he knows despite some amount of skepticism from Miguel. But you have to take my picture and display it on a Day of the Dead thing. Cause the problem is the moment you're forgotten, you can't
when
go
the last
back
living
anymore.
Person,
last
remember,
person
forgets
who remembers
you.
So this turns into a big adventure that involves my favorite thing about this film, the spirit guides, which are any given type of animal or fantasy creature that's a super multicolored and bizarre looking.
The creators watched a bunch of Ghibli movies.
Yeah, they totally did. There's one in particular that's like
it's a little Totoro.
Little Totoro.
But they're based on these little colorful Mexican
boys.
Totally,
but
they are that insanely colored. So
I think I saw
Quetzalcoatl
in there somewhere.
That was the first thought I had too.
By the way, it was Gael Garcia Bernal who plays Hector, for the record.
Okay.
And we should explain where Coco, the title, comes from, because at first, because I've only watched, I don't think I've even watched a trailer. I was like, who's Coco? And Coco
I didn't even touch the trailers.
Coco is the very elderly great-grandmother. This is the little girl who was, her father walked out, and this is the reason why the family has banished music. And yet, if she dies, he won't be remembered. So that's where it comes from. And God, I want to talk about this, but I don't want to spoil anything more.
I'm going to
pull back.
Well, before we even, if we were going to do a half spoiler or whatever, I want to talk, I really love this movie, but there are a few problems I see with it. Cause anytime a movie affects me like this, I have to sometimes take myself out of the emotion to really evaluate it. And that first 40%, they could have used, I can't believe I'm saying this in a song about music, in a movie about music. They could have used a yearning song. You know, the Princess song at the beginning of most Disney movies, Part of Your World.
Why can't I get what I want?
Yeah.
I think it perfectly was fine without that, honestly,
But my problem is that the main character is Miguel, and I don't really get his drive enough from the narrative without something like that. Like,
this
they sort
a
of
Disney movie, and both his parents are alive. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's like that's what I'm saying. Like, there's not
it was surprising,
and there's lots of dead parents, but that's cool because you can hang out with them.
No, but that's actually the point, though. There's not enough pathos until later in the movie. Mm-hmm. There's not.
I agree. It does come in later. At the beginning, though, I think part of the challenge is for a lot of people, you know, aren't going to be familiar with this. Yeah. I mean, I didn't grow up with Day of the Dead. It wasn't in my part of South Texas. It really wasn't closely observed. Whereas I have friends from Mexico who they are really, really into it. So I think a big challenge is just explaining that world, the rules of it.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm from
the East Coast. I never even heard of it.
Honestly,
in Texas.
Really?
The only reason I know about it is Book of Life.
What?
Which, I'm not trying to be funny. I love that movie.
In Texas. Yeah.
Well, I call my 2099 Spider-Man jacket my Day of the Dead jacket because that's why he has that suit to begin with.
Because of the Day of the Dead?
Yeah, Miguel O'Hara, that outfit he made it for Day of the Dead. And a lot of people forget that easily. Yeah. And so that's why I call that jacket that.
Than me.
Yeah, the thing is that, like, this movie brought out a lot in me that I forgot was there kind of thing. Like, honestly, like,
are you
going to
go on a vision quest?
Kind of, actually. like Marco was saying, like, Day of the Dead wasn't really something that I really celebrated, essentially, unless it came to my grandparents kind of thing, because they're straight from, like, especially on my mom's side of the family, they're most of them are straight from Mexico kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they all come from Eagle Pass kind of thing. And sometimes, you know, they bring it up every now and then, but it was one of those movies that, it was a movie that felt like a weird accidental soul search.
You do realize when you get to the afterlife now, there's going to be none of your relatives there thanks to you and your non-observant ways.
No, it's going to be all of my grandma's side or my mom's side, to be honest, as far as I can tell. But, this movie very much, like, it did a lot for me more than I expected possible, to be honest. Like, but I have to do what Elliot kind of said, where I have to try to distance myself emotionally from this film, and it's tough, I'm not gonna lie, but the thing about the movie, though, like, he's a little right with the way the beginning is. It's a little, like, it tries explaining some stuff from the get-go, but you don't know a lot about Miguel himself
in
the beginning.
Like, with the exception of, like, his lovable sort of, like, just street dog, it was really hard for me to connect with this film until it got to the afterlife.
Absolutely, because, like, in the beginning, it's just him, like, it's just showing him through what's essentially, like, a normal day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you get a little bit of what he wants to be, you know, from the fact he's like, I want to do music, and everyone's like, no, you don't. And then it's just like, well, there isn't a lot of that. Like, you don't really feel that, like...
Yeah, you don't feel
it. You don't say, like, hey, you should totally do that. Like, no, like, honestly... they might be on something sometimes in the beginning, because you're just like, well, you know, like, the guy just disappeared, so fuck that guy.
It's like, you know, it's like your family makes shoes. Even if you can't play music, you're still going to have soul.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a joke I would make.
That's a great pun, though. But no, like, yeah, he's right about, like, and I think Chris is right as well. Like, the movie doesn't really, really pick up until the curse happens, and then it picks up fast.
Then it becomes suddenly feels like a Pixar movie because it's crazy
creative.
Yeah.
And there's a very
colorful,
tight deadline. You have a ticking clock.
Yeah.
He has to do it by sunrise. Or else, you know, he's stuck forever in the dead and Hector will be forever forgotten. So, I mean, that's, you know, you can't go wrong with a ticking
clock. And they
throw
a lot of plot
structure
at you as fast as they can in that first chunk of it too, especially with the sequence for, Edward James Olmos's character, who's in there for, like, all of, like, 3 minutes.
Plays a friend,
but he did an interview that he says it's, like, one of the most proudest things he's ever done, like, ever. And I didn't know. I was wondering what he meant. And after seeing it, I'm like, oh, I think I get what he means kind
of
thing.
I think let's also be honest here. I mean, I'm sure coming from someone like Edward James Olmos, you know, if you look at his career, I mean, he's been able to be in a lot of great things.
Yeah, he teaches kids, what was it, just calculus?
Yeah. Stand of the Liver.
Yeah, well, Stand of the Liver, Zoot Suit, things like that.
Battlestar Galactica.
You know, and Battlestar Galactica, sure. But if you think about it, a lot of his career, there weren't a lot of roles for Hispanic characters.
Absolutely.
Or characters that were positive characters. And if you had told me as a child that one day – now, back then, we didn't have Pixar, so let's just say it's Disney. If you had told me one day I could go to a Disney movie and I would see Hispanic kids on screen, I would have been like,
And that's not be full stereotypes.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that, when is that going to happen?
By old orange peel skin.
Yeah, you know? I mean,
they might have done it's what like they old. Did to black people in the 90s, where it's like, you can be in a movie, but y'all going to be a bunch of lions.
Yeah, there you go.
We're not going to actually make you into a movie.
Than Song of the South.
Yeah, we had Cheech Marin as a fucking, what was that, a little wildebeest or whatever he was in that movie. Oh, that was our
movie. Yeah, he was a hyena.
He was a hyena, you're right. He was a hyena.
The touched hyena.
Oh, yeah, the crazy hyena.
That's just Ed.
You know. But yeah, so I think this will probably play very well towards that demographic. Let's be frank. You know, but why not? I mean, shit. I was sitting there in Rogue One going, Jesus Christ, I can't believe I'm watching a Mexican in a Star Wars movie. That blew me away. And 8-year-old me would have called you a liar
because
if you told me that
was going
to happen. Canon
had said that like all the Mexicans were dead. And that
they were, you know.
But here's the thing: like
we were all in the kitchen of the canteen.
It turns out many of them died to get those Death Star plans. Apparently,
yeah.
Oh, you guys are the both then.
That's right.
It was it was lost in translation.
Yeah.
No, but I tell you, and I usually don't like
And that's why they call them botana platters. It's actually from bota.
Oh, right.
They just made a snack and named it after
So when they were looking for people to go steal the plans, they just pulled up behind Home Depot.
That's pretty much it. It's like,
Trabajo.
For $20, man, I'll steal any fucking plans you want.
And I tell you, like, I usually don't like to talk about the explicit value of diversity, but you talk about Rogue One. That was my favorite movie last year.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I liked about it so much is the diversity enriched that movie. Because to me, it made it more believable.
Star Wars felt like a big universe.
Yeah, and so this is sort of the same thing.
I felt like there wasn't just one black guy in the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, where's the Lando? Who's the Lando in this shot?
And so this movie,
we need a Lando over here.
Waiting for some white guy to go. This movie is racist because there was no white people.
Well, you I'm do know that the current so vice president, Vice President Pence, and I think it was 1996, he was like a talk radio guy. He wrote a column attacking Mulan. Because it had a female in battle, and he said it was indoctrination. So you're joking, but we're going to get that hot take.
Oh, yeah. This is going to happen.
Well, it turns out Mike Pence is kind of a crazy person. So
yeah. I think that, you know, this is very, very drenched in Mexican culture for sure.
Absolutely,
I think that this will. I think this is still nonetheless going to appeal regardless.
Oh, yeah.
Kids across the board are going to really like this, and I think there's going to be some degree of people going, you know, why don't we do more Day of the Dead stuff? That really is kind of cool.
Right here. Like, I'm not Hispanic. And my wife and I, when we watched out the movie, we were like, that'd be sort of a cool thing to celebrate, but we don't know if it'd be cultural appropriation. So it's like, we wouldn't go full on Sugar Skull and everything.
I mean,
but just to honor the, like,
that depends on how you go about it.
There's definitely a hipster take on it. But you know what? Look, if you have a picture of your grandma on your mantelpiece, You're basically honoring the same idea.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to just put up a bunch of the decorations. I just want to be like, hey, I remember my grandmother.
But I do think for a lot of Americans, it was kind of not a cool thing to do anymore. It was like just part of American assimilation. You kind of move further away from these sort of Mexican traditions. So whether people will pick it up again, I don't know. I'm not a spiritual person at all.
You can tell them that they'll do it or we'll take away the Mexican Cokes. The hipsters will lose their shit.
Yes, right. Look, if you want a Topo Chico, this is what you got to put up
with. Exactly.
You like your tacos? Shut the fuck up.
Leave me queso.
I'm sorry, you do know Pepsi bought Topo Chico, right?
Yeah, now it's going global, everything. Yeah.
White people own it now.
Yeah, you know. God damn it.
Well, honestly, white people are the reason that they still use cane sugar in Mexican Coke.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
Cry about it.
Yeah.
They do love them.
World.
Once they convince people you could get an organic Coca-Cola, they're like, white people signed up. Like,
I'm eternally
like
grateful
Coca-Cola.
To them for that, though.
we used to go down to the valley and get them. That was a treat.
I lived in cases
of RC Cola because it was the only one you could get cane sugar of originally on like border towns. And he'd make trips like a couple times.
We wanted that pure sugar, man.
Truck full of that shit.
I didn't realize how much I missed it for like a long time.
Before we move too far, I just want to say. I think this is a great conversation. I really like the art direction.
Oh, God, yeah.
And yeah, we haven't talked about this movie.
What I really loved is, I love Book of Life, the movie that came out a few years ago, and they were similar yet distinctive.
Yeah.
And it really, like, I want more Day of the Dead movies now.
There's enough room for two or more Day of the Dead movies the same way there's more than enough room for an endless parade of Christmas films.
Right? Except for Once Upon a Time in Mexico. No one cares about you anymore.
No, it's not a great movie.
It's really
Did I ever tell you that my friend's grandma was obsessed with Robert Rodriguez because of the Desperado, like, movies kind of thing.
Really?
Because she saw it as representation.
Well, yeah. I mean, when...
But I mean, back in the 70s, blaxploitation was all you could get.
Yeah. That's the thing. I didn't realize, we were talking about that. I realized that explains a lot, though.
No, I felt that way about Rodriguez when I was like 18 years old. Yeah. I was like, wow, this Mexican dude in, you know, Texas just made this fucking movie for like five grand. And then he kept making that same movie over and over again, and I got a little tired of it.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Mexico was one of the only movies I can think of that had Day of the Dead predominantly.
I've always thought it was a beautiful, like, celebration. The whole idea of it, just the Mexican metaphor of it and everything is, like, very, very... No, not Desperado. I get the Dead.
Desperado is a good movie, though.
And I like the first two, not the third one.
One likes the third one.
Look, I would love to see, you know, this be a success and for that sort of idea of the Day of the Dead celebration being more infused into popular entertainment, because it's a pretty cool thing.
If you think about it, like, you got Halloween, you got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas... You could
squeeze it in there.
A Day of the Dead right in there.
Nobody already is in there.
Nobody's following Groundhog's Day unless you count everyone who rips off the movie, which is like once a year at least.
Don't drive angry.
Nobody celebrates St. Patrick's Day except just to get drunk. And this is Austin. We do that every weekend anyway.
That's true.
It's not any different than any other weekend except there's more green t-shirts. I mean, like, what else? You're like, yeah, there's plenty of room.
There's a little bit of room to squeeze.
I guess the Canadians have that Boxing Day bullshit.
What is going on with that stuff? We were having a conversation about that earlier.
No, I think it's Unboxing Day. They just do unboxing videos all day long. Just a bunch of Canadians unwrapping toys and putting them online.
I thought they just watched the greatest Ali Frazier fight, so.
Nice. Just all the Rockies, but, the last, only other criticism I have is, some of the music is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it could have used a little bit more work. It's not as swelling as I'm used to from Disney.
Yeah, I expected a few more, like, wow, drop everything musical numbers, and I felt like that wasn't really... Well,
for me, I mean, Michael Giacchino is doing the score for this, and Giacchino always does really good work. Generally. But for me, it felt like, you know, there were some songs that felt like they were really kind of Americanizing and making them a little more poppy.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, not that everyone's going to like mariachi music or any type of Spanish derivative music. I wasn't expecting anyone to do a full-out ranchera or something. But I was like, you know, this sounds like a pop tune. And it doesn't sound like – because the Ernesto de la Cruz character is supposed to be a guy who would have been around in like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this doesn't sound like the music of that time.
Absolutely not.
You know, but I'm like, I get it. You're doing the kind of – this happens even with Dreamgirls, which I really love. We talked about that last week when we reviewed the re-release on Blu-ray. I love that music, but I'm like, I know Soul and Stax and Motown – and that has a flavor of it, but it's a Broadway version of that.
It's homogenized.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens here with the music.
It really is.
It's a Disney version.
It's the Disney version of the movie.
But honestly, like, I didn't mind it a lot at all, really, to be honest.
No,
but to be clear, like, at least for me, I'm going out of my way to find flaws with the movie because it was so good.
I mean,
so
we're
good.
Nitpicking now.
Yeah.
We very much are nitpicking. And the thing about the movie is that there's so much good to talk about, but you spoil so much when you try delving into it.
Okay, I hate to be this guy, but you guys liked it more than I did.
Of course, it kind of helps that I got super ridiculously emotional about it.
I thought the whole thing was very sweet, but it didn't make me feel terribly emotional.
Mm-hmm.
For obvious reasons, there's almost zero cultural touchstones for me in the
growing Well, there's up, a lot so of, way, there's, but, yeah, there was a lot of, I think for some of us, there was a lot of baggage.
Right.
Of course. I mean, I cried like hell, but I cry all the time.
So my wife was crying next
to me. I watch Stranger Things and I cry because I'm like, oh, that's what my childhood was like.
I think that's probably what happens. Yes.
I cried at that too because I was like, I had both of those things.
I wasn't on that review, but the Stranger Things part where he's like, why do I got to be Winston?
Yeah,
that was my entire childhood.
Exactly. You know,
this movie made me a mess.
Do I have to explain to you why you have to be Winston?
Why?
Because you're the worst actor out of the four.
Oh, okay. Like, he makes the point that he comes on really late. And he's not even a scientist.
Exactly.
Anyway,
you haven't played the game yet, have
but
you?
My real reasoning isn't even that connection. It's that I actually found it kind of predictable. I was calling this movie's every turn way before.
Oh, no, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that if you know certain plots, that you see it coming a mile away.
Yeah. See, I just... when I'm,
but that's true of every Pixar film. When was the last time a Pixar movie said, oh wow, I had no idea it was going
actually
there.
I found myself often surprised by Pixar films. Inside Out had quite a lot of stuff where I was like, wow, that did stuff I never would have predicted where it was going to go.
I'm sometimes really dense. And I know that about myself. I can accept that. I just am.
This is recorded now. Thank God.
No, this man's a lawyer, by the way.
I know.
I'm gonna set up a hot button press for that one.
No, I just. But like, I know I'm liking a movie when I get so swept up in it that I'm not noticing the calls.
Right. Yeah, you're not thinking about
it. So like, if
it.
I was not enjoying this, you could have definitely seen this stuff coming, but I was so swept up in it. By the time they got to the Land of the Dead, I was like, and I didn't see everything happen until 5 minutes before it happened because I am 33, but if I was like 12 where this movie is really targeted,
yeah, sure, of course.
It felt a lot to me. This seems like it might have the same significance for some people that a Goofy movie had for me.
Which I've never seen.
A Goofy movie spoke to me when I was alone, because like, a Goofy movie is basically targeted. It's targeted at teens, but it's targeted at black teens.
I saw the porn version.
I'd rather not.
That gives an entire new meaning to the perfect cast.
No, I mean, she's really fucking goofy.
You know, you put that out in the world, and now it exists. It's the quantum theory.
It's already existed. Yeah. This is Rule 34 we're talking about.
I had never imagined it.
Don't imagine it, though.
No, I can't stop.
I just made it real. I apologize.
Made it real for him. It's already real for a lot of people.
Let's go to final thoughts. Elliot, why don't you start us out?
Really like the art direction. I wish the songs were stronger. Great voice acting. This is just, I mean, this is Pixar, not at its best, but at its close to best. And honestly, it just felt like they were showing off through about the entire movie, because there's a point where you're like, this is not living up to it. And I can just see Pixar studio heads being like, you think we're not living up to it? Give me a second.
I feel like there's a guy behind a curtain with a switch staring at Elliot, slowly rising it.
Yeah. And like, I can just feel that mouse being like, keep on making me that money. So for all of those reasons, I give it about 8.5 spirit animals out of 10.
Marco.
I'm with Elliot here. I could nitpick about a few things, which we have done, mainly around the music. And yes, some of the plot is a bit predictable, but I'm of the opinion that any good plot is kind of like a magic trick. You can do it really well, and I'm not going to notice the sleight of hand because I'm so engaged in the performance. If I can see the strings, you're not doing your job well. If I can see what's up your sleeve, you're not a good magician. Pixar is made up of really good magicians, and the spell worked on me. It may not work for you. Even though I know how the tricks work, I was still enjoying it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think if you have a sort of cultural connection to the material, you might have a slight bit more appreciation for it, but I think anybody can go into this movie cold and appreciate it. I give this 8.5 out of 10 sugar skulls.
Michael.
This movie, yeah, I couldn't nitpick it all day for little things, like I said, so music here and there. A little bit of plot missteps in the beginning, I think, but at the end of the day, I loved the shit out of this movie. Like, it brought so many emotions in me that I forgot existed for certain things. Cause yeah, it's one of those things where it's a culture that I grew up around for the first 18 years of my life kind of thing. I live right next to the border. Like, this sort of thing happened to certain people, like, or not certain, like, I knew these archetypes kind of thing. Like,
went to the Land of the Dead.
I've met these archetypes in certain times, like, they're my mom's side of the family, essentially, kind of thing. And it was kind of funny to me, because, like, I loved it so much, kind of thing.
Did you call your grandmother Abuela?
Yeah. I did, actually, and I'd rather not want to talk about that right now. there's a lot of reasons why this movie messed me up, a lot of personal reasons, kind of thing. Some that happened not too long ago, kind of thing, so that's why...
It's fresh.
It was very fresh, and it broke me emotionally to the point that I had a pretty good cry from the end of the movie to when I got here.
Yeah, you walked out of the theater still crying. You're like,
oh, yeah, I lost it again when I got my car.
Like, he demanded a hug. When I was like,
I did. I needed a hug so bad.
Honestly,
I called my mom and everything. Oh my God. But I got to give it 9 out of 10. Big Red and Barbacoas.
Oh, nice. Nice touch.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this, but I don't know. I just didn't feel like it was among Pixar's strongest. I was like, this is definitely a movie I'll revisit and joyfully so. Pixar still, even at their not in their top 10 is still better than most of the other animated films out there, and this is definitely one of those. I completely see how it's going to connect with a lot of people a lot more than it would for me, per se. But, and there's nothing really inherently wrong with this film on any level. There's nothing I can point at and go, man, they fucked that up. Because they didn't. It's fine. But if I was to put it up against Book of Life, I'm like, I kind of like them both on the same level. They're both pretty damn good films. Very colorful, very imaginative, like sort of like joyfully morbid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's okay. One of those guys, you know. I know it sounds like damning with faint praise, but that's not how I mean it. I give it 7.5 out of 10. Stories behind a gold tooth that we never got to hear.
That's true.
What's the deal with the gold tooth?
The thing that I love about Day of the Dead stories is that they're the few times that you can just say the word death over and over again, and no one's going to freak out about it.
That reminds me, this movie does one thing, this sounds really fucked up, but I love watching in movies, is when they just throw people off a fucking ledge and just don't care, they go full Jamie Lannister.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, oh, you're in my way. Fuck off!
And that's how you know I'm the bad guy.
There's a lot of ledge throwing in this movie. So don't even think about that. Is that a Mexican thing?
No, apparently.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.